Everybody, it's that time of the week again, bitch. I love this show. It is, yes, another exciting episode of Old School New School Comedy Podcast, and I am your shit-talking host, Christy Miller. And with me this week in the studio is a good friend of mine. I actually met him through my other buddy, Eric Marino. He's been doing stand-up for, it was like 14 years, is that right? 14. And he has an album out that came out a few years ago called Shame, Pain, and Love. Because if you say it too fast,
yeah.
Sounds like, you know, he was complaining.
Pain and love.
So I have to say it really slow. Shame, pain, and love. So,
because right, it really does sound like an right. R&B. Film,
it does,
right?
Totally.
Yeah.
And then he just finished recording his special, Nothing to Nobody, which is premiering soon. We'll find out all that information. But first, let me introduce you to stand-up comic, good friend of mine, runs a show in Brooklyn Heights every week called The Punching Bag, and his name is Damon Millard.
Hey, I'm Damon Millard.
Hi, Damon.
Hi, Willie. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you.
Canceled.
Yeah. All right. Well, it was a good run.
It was. Now we'll talk to you guys later.
You know how relieving that would be to just cancel and not have to do this?
I told someone before, I said, you know, when I released my album, Brutally Yours, on iTunes, Apple, Spotify, Tidal, Amazon Music, wherever you stream, like my shameless plug.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a bit about Roe versus Wade, and I clipped the part about why women my age shouldn't have babies, even though we still can, doesn't mean we should.
Yeah.
And it's really caught, and I thought, oh, this is going to get me canceled. This is going to get my album out there. People are going to share it. Like, what a piece of shit is she? It only got like 5,000 views. It got a bunch of shares, but it got, you're so cool. You're so honest. That is the realest shit we ever heard. We love you. And I'm like, God damn it. I can't even get canceled.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Like, damn it.
Yeah.
Damn you, Shane Gillis.
Yeah.
Give me your power.
Yeah, it's the rule of the universe. Whatever you want to have.
Relax. Damon's crossing his arms. He's like,
we're talking about having a baby at your age. And then, you know, it's that time of the month, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still get it.
Yeah. That's,
isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Haters.
I thought you'd be out of eggs by now, right?
Dude, I am. I just go to the store every month. You know how expensive eggs are nowadays?
Yeah, yeah.
They used to be 99 cents a dozen. No, my eggs aren't frozen. They're just fucking powdered. I'd love
just
to
add sperm.
Not even. The sperm would come out of cokehead snorting all that powder. Yo, this is some good shit, man. Let's get that old pussy egg. What happened to us?
I don't know.
So, Damon.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. So, you've been doing stand-up 14 years now.
14.
And where did you start stand-up?
I started in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That's what I consider my home scene, even though I'm an upstate guy. I'm New York, upstate New York guy.
And nobody claims that.
No, nobody.
Nobody that, like, their eyes aren't glued together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know, that their gene pool is a shallow doughboy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, no one claims it. So where are you from? Tell everybody where.
I'm from Binghamton, New York.
Woo! Yeah!
607.
You know what that, use that in a sentence. Well, I fucked 6 or 7 of my cousins last night. It was a good time.
That's solid.
Right?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm here all week, ladies and gentlemen. That's
like 607. Really,
6 or 7.
Yeah. So I'm from there.
I use jokes like that when I play white trash places like that.
I think I got one for you.
Do it?
Yeah, I'll book you after this.
Oh, perfect. Let's do it. I love trash. You know, I'm Oscar the Grouch in comedy. I love garbage.
Oh, you're going to love this place. I got one.
Let's go.
All right.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're from Binghamton and your hometown is like, so what, how did you end up in Milwaukee?
It's a really long story, but I used to work in TV news.
Okay.
As a photojournalist.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was working in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a job in Tulsa, Oklahoma, doing the same thing.
Tulsa.
Tulsa. So I spent a year and a half in Tulsa, and then got another job in Milwaukee. So I was traveling the country doing just TV news. Because every time
it's cool.
Every time you go to a bigger city, the pay goes up,
of course,
and just the quality of the news coverage is better. And then
because they got normal people.
Yeah, yeah.
You just rolled this fucking Ford F-150 and fucked this in the back. That was at 11.
That's what it was like in Binghamton when I did. When I did news in Binghamton.
Oh, did you not do news in Binghamton?
I did.
That's amazing. Yeah. Okay, give us some news. Give us some news.
Okay.
A typical news story in Binghamton.
Just like, you know, like daycare workers fucking their kids and like,
gotta move.
Yeah.
People, that's my show.
just insane small town stuff, you know?
Like, what was the craziest story you had to cover in Binghamton, New York?
You know, I
there's so many.
There is a lot. I have a bad memory from alcoholism, though, too.
Yeah.
And also just, like, repressed memories from...
Yeah. Trauma.
Trauma. So it's really hard for me, especially in this business, really hard for me to, like, go back into those early memories.
Oh, yeah. Mine are blocked.
Mine are, like, blocked off, and they're definitely misremembered, too. And
sure, because your brain's trying to process the trauma.
But, like, you know, like, if a truck got stuck under an overpass, that would be, like, the main news story for the whole weekend. What I mean?
Truck? An 11-foot truck tried to go under a 10.5-foot overpass. You know what I mean?
And, like, that would be, like, our main story.
That would be, like, on this Hold My Beer segment.
Yeah.
We got a 11-footer trying to squeeze in a 10.5-er.
I think one of the funniest stories I ever covered was I had a friend named Peanut. And
of course you did. Binghamton people.
And he got caught with, like, pounds and pounds of weed, right?
He was
like, moving weed from, like, upstate to upstate and then selling it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the photographer, then went to the sheriff's press conference, and I had to videotape his weed and his money. You know what I mean? So it was, like, really funny.
Hey, I know this guy. He'll let us in. Don't worry. Use me, I'll knock. Let me knock.
Yeah. So there was that, and, you know, it was all small-town crap. And then from there, I went to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and then it became slightly bigger town, but more redneck crap.
Sure.
Even though Binghamton has its own rednecks, so a lot of people don't know.
Binghamton has its own, like that's like, did you ever see the original version of The Hills Have Eyes?
The Australian one?
No, the George Kennedy, the 70s one.
I really didn't know.
Okay, it's one of the greatest movies ever made. If you're into like 70s B horror flicks,
I will definitely check it out.
George Kennedy and who were the other people in it? I can't remember, but it was called, you know, and then they remade it in like the 90s. They remade it. And I didn't see it because I was very upset by it.
Yeah,
like, don't fuck with the classics.
Yeah.
It's like cheesy
you're
classics.
You're a curmudgeon when it comes to that stuff.
You're fucking up my B-movie classics. Like, don't try to spread peanut butter on dog shit. But the thing is, like, this was like a part of, like, New Mexico where the car broke down. And, and there was these mountain people.
Yeah.
That's Binghamton.
Yeah, that's what...
Special kind of people that don't...
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to explain. It's like, if you don't have... Like, some people make the mistake, regular people make the mistake of, like, oh, let's get off at this exit and fill up. And you are fucked. Last time I was home with my girlfriend, who is a normal person.
Yeah, she is. I love her, by the way.
She's great. She just texted to say, you that she loves you.
I love you, Zazana.
So we went to this gas station, like, mini mart in my old neighborhood.
Right.
And they will not let more than one person in the store after 8 p.m., and the guy behind the counter has to come and let you in. That's how dangerous my old neighborhood is.
That's amazing.
Yeah, she took a picture of it. I'll send it to you.
Please, because that is so, like...
In the description of...
Because there's civilization, and you have white people, and you have black people, and you got Latins, and you got Asian, you got all this stuff, but up there you got... white people.
Yeah. That's
like, it starts with an H. Like, they flip the W and the H in their word. White people.
White people.
White people.
It is scary up there because there's
how
something...
How did you escape?
Well, I'll get to... Something happens to you when you remove hope. when there's no hope, fucking, you revolt against everything, like against your own shit. So like everything there is, it's like Bosnia, dude. It's war torn. You know what I mean? And it's like the only thing keeping Binghamton afloat is the fact that they have that really good university there. And so
it's true.
There's this influx of Long Island Jewish money that comes in
right.
from parents every semester. Yep. And that's what keeps this place from just literally starving to death.
Yeah. It's quite sorry. I forgot about Binghamton University.
Like, yeah.
It's
I actually
a great school. Wow.
This goes back to how I escaped. So
okay.
I escaped because I learned to read. And that got me out. A lot of people skip that.
they totally skip the first 10 grades.
Yeah, and so a lot of people can't wait to just quit school. Like, that's a lot of people's dream. I can't wait until I'm 16 and I don't have to do this. And
oh, my God.
Yeah, and so I went to community college there.
Okay.
And then I did really good. And then I did really well.
In school.
You ain't from around here, idiot.
And so I transferred into the university, which is really hard to get into.
That's really
but
hard.
But I did have that, like...
Binghamton edge.
Yeah, that edge of, we gotta let one of these tarts in here, you know what I mean?
This one looks promising.
Yeah, so I got in basically on that, because I didn't really have the background to get into Binghamton University. Like, it really is a top school somehow. You know what I mean?
Hey, you don't have the gene pool or the... What's the other thing they call? Like, the... not the credentials, but it's something like...
The
pedigree.
The pedigree.
That's it.
Yeah, and I wasn't a legacy.
Nope.
In fact, I was the first person in my family to go to college. So anyway, I went...
And the last. Good night. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's our show.
And so I went there, and I went to cinema. I went to the cinema school there.
Okay.
And it wasn't...
It was weird.
It was weird. It was like... It wasn't like learn how to make a movie. It was like learn how to make weird art films. And so that's what I did. I watched a Yoko Ono film, which is butts, going clenching butts for 30 minutes. And then it just cut to another butt, and it'd be another... like 2 minutes of this butt going like this, and then it would cut to another butt, and it was a 30-minute movie. And that those are the things I had to watch and then write a paper about it. You know what I mean? And like, anyway, so I did that.
Well, it was Yoko Ono, so it kind of means something.
Yeah. And there was another movie that was really good. It was called Zoom by somebody Snow. I forget. Maybe it was Michael Snow. Immaterial. The movie is a 35-minute... It's a room, and it just slowly zooms in for 35 minutes into a picture on the back wall. That's the whole movie.
Like, this course is, how high can you get and film a film?
Yeah. Like, you don't weed, but then you have to write the paper, so you're like, I need this.
I need to see their vision.
Yeah. And so I graduated from there. And with a cinema degree,
okay,
and then the waited tables in my hometown with a degree, doing nothing with my life, really, you know, like cucking some old guy and stuff like that. Like that's about it, you know. And then I actually lost that job. Like, I got fired, and so I went to the local.
Is there a train that just went by? It'll be edited out, don't worry.
Okay. And then I went to, I just went to the local TV station because I knew a guy who worked up there, and he was like, yeah, I think they're hiring a photographer right now. So I went up there, and, oh, this is a good story, too.
Okay.
So I go there, and I apply for a photojournalist job, and I had my tape from film school, which is all weird stuff, like... The videos I showed them were like Prozac pills spinning and there's like, you know, just close up of boiling water, and that cuts to like a fucking like a crying infant, and like it's just like just weird films, right? And this is what I showed them to get a job in TV news. And the guy was like, well, I can tell you know how to edit and shoot, you know. We do the more basic stuff here. And I was like, I know.
We're not so train spotting.
Yeah, it was
we're more like spotting trains.
Yeah, it was all avant-garde shit. And so then he was like, yeah, we could probably use you. Just I need you to give me your DM, because you're going to be driving a lot for this job, because you got to drive to the news stories.
Right.
And he was like, just bring me your DMV abstract, which is basically like a record of every accident you've ever...
Sure.
Any speeding tickets you've ever gotten.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a license.
Oh, my God.
So I got it because I did have a learner permit at
okay,
the time.
Good. Okay.
I had a learner permit at the time, so I got the abstract, and I showed it to him. And he's just sitting there scratching his head. And he's like, something here doesn't make sense. And he's like, do you have a license? And I was like, no, you caught me. Oh, and I forgot to put this little detail in. I was wearing fake glasses to make me look smarter. So I borrowed my friend's glasses that are prescription. And I couldn't see anything.
Oh, so my.
I'm in this interview, and I'm wearing these glasses that, like, bottle... like Coke bottle glasses that make my eyes look like little pin drops.
Yeah.
And then he's telling me this, and he's like, so I basically got caught lying about having a license at the interview, and he still gave me a shot. He was like, I'll tell you what, if you can get your license by October, you can still have the job. And I was like, oh my God, thank you. So I went, and I found I searched the whole state database, and I found the place closed, like, they had the earliest appointment
mm-hmm.
to get a license.
Mm-hmm.
And I drove to Goshen, which is closer to New York City. It was like a two-hour drive.
Right.
I went down there, and I barely passed the test, but I did.
You did, so that's all that matters.
And that got me into TV news.
Wow.
And then I really loved TV news for, like I got good at it. You can be a good... videographer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people aren't because there's, like, no point in it at some
right.
You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
you might be able to sense the difference, but most people watching don't care. They don't care.
They're just listening to the info. Yeah.
Yeah. But I got pretty good at it. And there's an organization called the NPPA, the National Press Photographers Association.
Mm-hmm.
They teach certain basics and principles to mm-hmm. how to shoot and edit how to shoot and edit certain stories, and I got really good in those principles, you know what I mean? And so when I put together a demo reel, I sent that off to that place in Tulsa,
mm-hmm.
and they brought me down there.
Nice.
And then I started shooting different kinds of
news stories
like malnourished horses and stuff like
that. Poor babies.
Yeah.
And then you ended up in Milwaukee.
And then Milwaukee was the next jump in TV news, where malnourished horses in the snow, you know.
Drinking beer.
Yeah, drinking beer.
Laverne and Shirley, yeah. Back to you.
Yeah, a lot of Packers stories.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, there's a Packers watch party at this bar. Lady gets mad because the Packers lose and kills her husband. You know, things like that.
And takes out the whole team.
Yeah.
News at 11. Well, shit.
And in the long... Okay, and now I'm about to answer your first question.
Mm-hmm.
So while I'm there...
Yeah.
I had got the bug to do stand-up.
Okay.
I was always really funny at parties. Like, people would...
Were you, though?
No, I'm people told me.
Liar! No,
yeah. If I could go back and remember any of those parties,
right.
I probably wouldn't.
You'd have a whole new hour of material.
Oh, probably.
Right?
Yeah. So I would, like, tell stories, and people would, like, gather around and, like, listen to me tell these stories, and I would just be roasting constantly.
Right.
Because we, in Binghamton, we did a thing called ranking, which is roasting, but, like, on the fly. Like we were pure lovers of it. We weren't doing it for TV credits. We were
right.
just, like, fucking making fun of people.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Hurting each other's feelings nonstop.
Yeah.
And, like, what would happen is you would say something off-color to somebody, and somebody would be like, "Oh, are you guys ranking?" And then, like, it would turn into, like, a fucking live roast.
Oh, I love
no
it.
No cameras, nothing. Right. And I had a friend, Katie, who was, like, the best. She's made grown men cry.
We love her.
Yeah, dude. She was a beast, right? And so this was, like, in my blood. My uncle was a great storyteller. I mean, all of his stories ended up with him in prison, but they were good. Like, you knew where it was going to end up, but, like...
How he got...
The journey.
Yeah, the journey's everything.
The journey was...
Because how many different paths he took to go to prison.
Yeah. So no matter how the story started, it always ended up with him going to prison. His name was Choo Choo Charlie, by the way.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it be?
So Choo Choo Charlie had a plethora of stories that I would sample from at my parties when I was
parties.
And there was this kid, he was another photojournalist, Jim Dow. I still remember his name because he was like, you got to do stand-up, bud. You got to do stand-up. And that was like deeply like stuck in there.
Right.
And I'm like, maybe I am good at something.
Yeah.
And so then I was trying to steal my cousin's girlfriend. And I thought, because I love stand-up comics, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought doing stand-up was cool.
Right.
I didn't realize no one else thought it was cool.
Yeah, right.
So I was bragging to this girl about doing stand-up, even though I hadn't done it yet.
Guys will say anything to get pussy.
Yeah, I was trying so hard.
And the fact that you're a stand-up comic, that's the lowest of the low.
I know. Like, if I knew...
You should have said astronaut, TV producer,
or...
You could have said, you know, lead singer, Van Halen. You could have said anything.
I didn't think...
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought that maybe she had the same admiration. I was blinded. It was romantic to me. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, traveling the country, just talking about yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, and then there was all the greats from back then that I loved. You know what I mean? Martin Lawrence and shit like that.
Oh, yeah.
Those are my boys. And, I loved them. And so I thought it was, like, something to brag about. So I lied to her. And it didn't work. I kissed her once, and then my cousin still hates me to this day.
Never fight over pussy. Guys, rule of thumb, no pussy's worth fighting over. There's plenty more out there. Seriously, it's not... Yeah. There's not, if it doesn't pay your bills or, the golden arches or open up the pearly gates or cure cancer, don't fight over it.
Yeah. I did, too. Did you know I went to jail because I hit a guy in the face with a bottle over my daughter's mom? Yep, I did it. I failed.
I'm surprised that's the only thing you've done.
No, not
being
only
Binghamton.
No, that gave me my Binghamton credentials.
Well, you got your street cred.
I got my street cred on that one.
You ain't from Binghamton until you go to jail.
Yeah. So I went to jail for that. And
that's a family tradition.
It is too, yeah.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, that's so sweet. You're a legacy in jail.
Yeah, I got my stripes.
Yeah. Not university, but in jail, you're a legacy.
I finally got my. I am. Oh, my lord's here. Choo choo Charlie just left. You know?
Hey, I love your uncle.
Missed your uncle.
Fuck out of here. Well, we ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
See you in mess hall or whatever it's called. Yeah. GP. I don't know. I'm bad.
So then. Remember the girl I told you about, Katie, who was like the best ranker?
Right.
She would just destroy you. Like, I hated it. I've beat her up a couple times in the ranks, but she won't get you in the end.
Right.
It's just
She's a
She was clever, and she saw it, and she was always calling you a smoke. You know what I mean? Like, she'd find that one thing that you were, like, insecure about.
Oh, yeah.
And as soon as she brushed on it, she knew she got it.
Oh, yeah.
Just digged until she got you. And so... Sadly, she was killed by her boyfriend.
Oh, my God.
I know. Terrible. It still hurts. And I came back here.
Were they ranking and he got mad and killed her?
Probably did. I would not be surprised if that would got him. Actually, that would be... They should put a statue up of her.
Dude,
you got killed over roasting somebody so hard.
Yeah, your boyfriend so hard he killed you.
Yeah. I really don't know what it was about.
So sad.
And it took a long time for them to get justice on this guy, too. Like, they didn't prove it for, like, over a year, so he was, like, out free. Not truly out free, like, out ducking people, because you know how big...
Yeah, because, everybody's related.
Yeah.
Everybody's... They share the same, chromosome.
That guy was out, like, wearing, like, fake mustaches and shit, you know?
Look, his asshole with a fake mustache.
Yeah.
Don't fool me.
You'd beat up if you just look like this guy.
Yeah.
His name was Frank. And like, he'd be like, hey, you kind of look like Frank. But I'm not though.
Frank the rank.
Yeah. So I'm back home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to her funeral. That lie was floating out there with Cindy, my cousin's girlfriend at the time. And the idea of life being short. And what was keeping me from actually doing stand-up,
all of those things
were like in this weird soup of anxiety and depression and just like existentialism and seeing one of my best friends in a coffin, and I was like, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. So mm-hmm. 2 weeks later, with about a minute of quasi like structural jokes and 8 minutes of rambling, I went and I did an open mic at a place called the Miramar Theater in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Cost you $2 and you got a CD, a recorded CD of
The worst set of your life.
The worst set of your life. I don't.
That's worth $2 though.
I have the second.
Do you?
I have the second set I've ever done on CD somewhere. It's going to be horrible.
That should be like a B-side to your next album.
Yeah,
like a bonus track. Yeah. And like people download can pay extra and get the bonus track.
Yeah. That shit.
Like this is my first time doing stand-up or whatever it is, however you want to word it. But that's a bonus track, bro.
It's funny you bring that up because at the end of the credits of my new special, mm-hmm. I do have a clip from 2011. It was like one of the earliest videos I could find mm-hmm. where I do this shitty joke with like a terrible looking camera and the audio is shitty. But I was like,
it's great.
I'm just gonna
plug that's perfect. What a perfect thing, because it's like a whole full circle.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Because the special was shot in Milwaukee as a homecoming of sorts. You know what I mean?
Right, I remember that.
And because I was like, this was like my debutante ball. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I feel like I finally arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had that comedy album come out in 2016, and I've done a lot of stuff that I'm proud of. Like, I'm finally here. You know what I mean? Like, 14 years in, and with this specific material, it's mm-hmm. all gelled in a way that I'm like there. Like, I feel like I belong in the club. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I belong with the people I respect, the people I've always looked up to doing stand-up. I feel like I can hang. You know what I mean? Like, if I was on the same bill as them, I wouldn't be worried that they're watching me anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That is around the 15-year mark when you feel that. Like, I always tell people, you know, around the 10-year mark is when you find your voice. Yeah. You spent 10 years developing it, trying different things, and then, you know, because it's like, I always say stand-up is like a baby you give birth to. So at 10 years old, you kind of have a conscience now. Kids know right from wrong. They're pretty independent. They can make their own decisions. They can let themselves in and out of the house, like latchkey kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, they're just my childhood.
No.
Loser. Talk about trash.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah.
Garbage day.
Garbage,
right here.
Yeah.
Oscar the Grouch loves me.
Yeah. My mom would always leave expecting to be back in time for us to get out of school.
Sure.
But she
never did.
Start drinking and not come home, and I'd have to like break windows or find different ways into the home.
Break in your house?
Yeah.
You had to do that before where the key wasn't under the mat.
Yeah.
Like if one of the other kids got home. Yeah.
Yeah.
If my brother came home before me
mm-hmm.
and the key wasn't under the mat because he'd take it inside and leave it and then leave or whatever or lock the door, and I'm like climbing the fences, climbing windows. Yeah. I never broke anything, but I knew how to open up windows and climb in them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was my way of getting in. But, those old days. And what were we talking about?
Yeah, I don't know.
Coming.
Yeah, coming. Yeah, so like I was like...
Oh, yeah, the point of view voice. So the 10 years. So at that point, now that you're approaching 15, like you're in your 14th year, approaching 15... You are at that level where you've had 4 or 5 years to write for that voice you spent 10 years developing.
Right.
So now you got good footing.
Yeah.
You know, so now you can roll. You know what I mean? Like, it's usually around 14, 15 years is when I see people do that shift to the next level. It's really cool.
Yeah, and then you can actually even go back. Because, like, a lot of comics say, like, they'll try something at a mic 3 or 4 times. If it don't work, they throw it out. I never did that. I just put it off to the side until I had writer's block and I'd work on it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that I am experienced, I'm going back to jokes I've written early on. And I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, here's the problem with this joke. And like, I'm taking 15 years of experience onto a viewpoint of a year in.
Yeah.
And I'm able to like unlock it and fix it. And now that I can use that joke, or at least that subject matter, or maybe a line I wrote.
Well, now you're older, you're more experienced, you have more experience in stand-up, so you have all this trifecta of aging, living, and stand-up under your belt. So now you could take those old premises, And it won't be from that 1 year stance anymore.
Right.
And won't be from that point of view. Like you won't be looking at it anymore. You'll see where you were. And then you go, yeah, but nowadays I can take this same idea and now I can develop the shit out of it because I didn't have this experience back then or even the life experience to do that.
Right, yeah. Has this ever happened to you? You ever make a joke? Clearer.
Yeah, I'm a comic. Get that kind of it. Yes.
You take a bit that you put on the shelf and just like, maybe in the middle of a show, you just reach up into your brain, and for some reason, that's what comes out.
Yeah.
Now it works. You can change anything, but like all of a sudden, you're saying it with your whole chest or something. Or...
Well, it's you're saying it with your experience.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying. It's just like what we're talking about. It's an old bit that you've had stored up in the files in the brain, and you pull it out and you do it, but you're doing it from a 15-year experience.
Yeah.
You're doing it from how old are you now?
In age? 46.
No, in dog years, asshole. In regular age.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure I wanted to give that up. But well, yeah, I'm 46.
Okay, so, but I'm saying you're a 46-year-old man who has all, in your 40s, you really start to become a man. Then when you turn 50, things change. Like your brain shifts to a whole new level. Like you unlock this level in the video game. But in your 40s, you're pretty settled. You know who the fuck you are now. You're not a 20-year-old kid anymore. So taking that old bit in your 40s is going to sound different and better, and it's going to work because you spent all that time developing your voice. So now your voice knows how to say it.
You know, and people talk about the voice, like, a lot. And it wasn't until recently, just, like, off the top of my head, I was, like, talking to, like, some younger comics that I kind of brushed against what maybe it really means. And it's like, when you do stand up, you have to do this like self evaluation constantly, and you have to analyze your thoughts in a way that like people from my hometown don't do. They work at the factory, they don't fucking investigate why that made them feel that way.
They don't live, they exist.
Right. Like, but for me, like, in order to develop material and to like go into certain things, like, I have to be like, why did that situation mess me up so much? And then you start doing like this like self check-in,
right?
And then and it does make, and I think like that's why comics like are more well-rounded people, because they like, you have to do that in order to do material. You know, we're getting like
But you have to do a checklist. Why did that? Because you know, even just in life in general, that's called growth and maturity.
Right. But
you know, and so you're breaking down. Why was I so upset over that? And then you could do the check, and that's beautiful.
Yeah, and you don't have to do that in normal life. Like a lot of people skip that whole step in regular life. Like my mom gets angry, like if she's in a long line at a grocery store, right? And all she does is,
because that's not why she's angry.
Right. That's not why.
That's an underlying layer. Right. She
would never dive in and be like, I gotta figure out what's wrong with.
Okay, what's really bothering me? Because this doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Like I always tell people, my checklist in life is: does it pay my rent? Does it put food on my table, clothes on my back, or eat my pussy? No. Yeah. So if it doesn't hit that checklist, it doesn't matter to me. There's no power in my life.
Right.
But people like your mom, or people that live in small towns, or just exist and just go to work, come home, go to work, come home, do that stuff. They're not looking at the whys of life. They're just going, what? Like, what about this? Why me?
Right.
They're doing a why me, not just a why am I reacting? Why is this happening? Why do I keep putting myself in the same situation? Because they don't look at the whys. They just go, it's just so sad.
Yeah.
So, because we are here at the comic strip, so there's a lot going on.
There's a little bit of background activity, though.
It's like background action, like we're the principals and the background actors are doing their thing to look like a real scene.
Yeah, except in a movie, they're quiet.
Oh, that.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Oh, speaking of.
Okay.
So my girlfriend, right, Zuzana, she, you know, she's from a Polish descent.
Yes.
She speaks Polish.
Yes.
And she's an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's been getting these gigs lately. She's been getting these gigs lately where she voices the background of. So when a scene is shot for a movie, the background is completely quiet, unlike at the comic strip.
Unlike, yeah.
Right.
Because Remy told them that there's a podcast going on, but they don't care. It's fine.
But later on, they record the background sound.
Oh, wow.
And they use real actor.
Okay.
Real SAG actor to, like, put in the voices later. And so she's been, and because of her ability to speak Polish, she's been doing this Holocaust one. But they've been recording it at home. She's got a really good microphone and
right,
stuff.
Uh-huh.
But she's had to yell at the top of her lungs in our apartment.
Oh my God!
She's like, kill those fucking Jews! Get them! They're pigs!
Oh,
hey, they fucking Jews!
But now,
so like, if you're walking by the hallway of our apartment on a weekday,
I'm dead.
You just happen to hear Hell Hitler. You know what I mean? It's like. We're not having a meeting, and she's just like recording audio for a film or something.
She's an actress.
Yeah.
She's pretending to hate him.
Yeah, she's pretending. Quote, unquote.
It's so cool to be fake. Like, this is a SAG deal, honey.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was something.
It's hilarious. That's really funny. I love it. I love Zuzana.
She's great.
So, from Milwaukee, what brought you to New York?
Oh, man. Okay, so I became the resident host of Milwaukee's Comedy Cafe. It was a cool little club, but they were, like, really stuck in booking headliners from the 80s well into the 2000s.
Yeah, when was that, like, the 90s?
Well, I started in the early 2000s, like, I started 2009, and so I was probably past and the resident host there probably in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's when I would work. I worked with this guy. I don't want to say his name because he's probably still...
Alive?
Alive, and maybe not, though. He was rough, dude. There was... He was like one of the first headliners I featured for.
Right.
And but he was a real mess, but he had his bits locked in from like 1984. You know
right.
I mean? All the
You can say the name, we don't care here.
Yeah, it was Scott Papacuri.
Said no one ever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And so but I remember I went over to the comedy condo because I was a local and I was featuring. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to stay in the condo. And I went over there, right? It's 8 in the morning. He said he was nervous about my material and wanted to talk to me. So I went over there. He called me up at 8 in the morning to go over there. So I fucking, you know, it was my first, like, feature weekend.
Right.
And, so I go over there, and I come in, and he's got, like, this paper plate with all these thin, like, pin joints that he had rolled into, like, the wrapping paper that's out on the outside of a toilet paper roll. He's got like 50 of these tiny little pins here, and he goes, "You want one?" I go, "No, Scott, it's too early for that for me." And he goes, "Yeah, you're right, it is too early." And he puts that off to the side, and then he takes another paper plate that has a bunch of Coke on it, and he just does two big lines.
Oh my God! Welcome to the 80s.
Right, and then he's walking around the condo. Right? And I go, "Yeah, it's pretty nice. I've never stayed here." And he goes, "Yeah, this is classy, man. I could see like Bon Jovi staying in a place like this." Bon Jovi is his like definition of class. You know what I mean? And
well, shot to the heart, and you're to blame.
Yeah, and I forgot where I was going with that. But
how you got to New York?
Yeah. So I was doing that. I was meeting a lot of headliners, and headliners would take me on the road, and I was like. You know, I was ripping through my paid time off at work, and I was like, I'm ready to fucking quit my day job. And I was in love with this girl at the time who was like a travel nurse. And what she would do is she would get in a 3-month assignment in a city, and then she'd move on to the next city for three months, and then you'd stay there for 3 months. And so we went to Dallas. I quit my job, idiotically. Because I ripped through my savings so fast, and I had no money. I actually took a job at Starbucks for a little bit.
Oh my God!
After being like a top photojournalist in the country, and then I was doing
latte.
getting in fights with like soccer moms and shit. But And I did. I quit because I was like, I was getting all these gigs that I couldn't take from these headliners. They were like offering me shit.
Right.
So I quit and I went with her to Dallas. And then I realized I made a mistake because the reason I was getting all those gigs is because I was like based.
Yeah.
And I was taking these comics to their next gig and they would let me either like MC or feature for their next gig.
Right.
And like those gigs kind of dried up. And then I'm in this Dallas comedy scene, which I didn't like.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't like it there.
Yeah.
Everybody was like trying to kiss ass to the hyena. Like,
yeah.
And shit.
Yeah.
Like, it was the only place I ever went to where everybody did the same exact 5 minutes every single place they went because they were hoping to like develop that into an MC gig.
Yeah.
Like,
oh. It's sad.
Yeah.
It's sad. It makes Binghamton look like Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
So.
So we came, then our second jump was here to New York City. We were in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of fell in love with it. Like, this is the Mecca. And it's where I always wanted to be.
Right.
And long story short, it fell apart with her. And things progressed. And I had things going on here. So after a while, I just made this, like...
You made it your home.
My home.
And now you're here.
Yeah. And I've been here since 2013.
Yeah. Oh, see, look at that. 10 years now. Look at you. Big shot. Well, I love you for being on here. I always wrap up the show with two questions.
All right.
So the first question is there a bit a comic has done that made you go, God damn it, that's brilliant. I wish I had written that.
I mean, yes and yeah, absolutely.
We all have them. I have a list.
I mean, I should actually write it down, and I thought about doing that after you sent me this in the text. But the bit that Louis does about, of course, but do you know that one?
Yeah.
It's like kids need to be, these kids with peanut allergies need to be protected. You know, of course they do. We need to make sure we don't take peanuts into schools. But, you know, but if we just turn a blind eye for like one generation, we'll never have to do that again. I think that's just like insanely good.
It's so simple. It's funny. And those are the best jokes that are right there in front of your face that someone catches before you do. And you go, God damn it. I should have saw that.
Yeah. And then of course, my favorite bit of all time, I think, is that I couldn't have written, but just for entertainment purposes, is Bill Burr's muffins bit.
Oh, anything. Yeah, he's brilliant.
I mean, it's just his story and the way he tells it. And and I was like, that's how you tell a story.
Yeah.
That's how you tell a joke story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like one punch.
Punch. Yep. It's all punches.
Yeah, but the story's moving forward at the right pace.
Yep, it's building. And it's brilliant. It's,
yeah.
It's a whole...
Yeah.
You're it's like, a formula.
That is the top. You know, like, that is the top of the game. Like, there's, you know, maybe 50 years from now, the game will have changed. But that's how you do it. Like, that is it.
But that's comedy. Comedy is comedy. You can change it with TikTok and all the dumb shit and try to alter it, but it's still comedy. You can't let go of that, the roots of it.
Yeah.
But, so my other question is, because I did open for Paul Mooney for 12 years.
Yeah.
That he would always end his shows on street jokes, and then he would Mooneyize them.
Oh yeah,
he would make them hit, and he would just murder the room. And it's like when Mooney would start doing street jokes, I'm like, all right, he's wrapping up. Good, we can get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
And but what is your go-to street joke? Because we all love them.
I just heard this one.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm a bartender.
Yes.
So I get this old guy. His name's Larry. He comes in. He's probably like late 70s, but he tells me a lot of them. I have a clean one and a dirty one. Which one do you want?
Sure. Are they quick?
Yeah, sure.
Do it. Do both. Whatever.
All right. Here's the clean one.
Okay.
The clean one is a guy goes to the doctor, right? And he had to take some tests, right? And the guy goes, hey, the doctor's like, hey, I got some really bad news for you. You got dementia. He goes, oh, no. And he goes, I got some other bad news for you. You're diabetic, right? And he goes, oh, man. At least I don't have that. Dementia.
Stupid.
I wasn't diabetic. I choked in the moment.
Right.
It's okay. Something else that's really bad.
Right.
And the second one is another. The guy goes to the doctor, right? And he goes, Doc, man, my penis fell off. He goes, what? I don't believe you, right? And he goes, let me see. And the guy pats his shirt pocket. He pulls out a scar and he goes, He goes, that's not a penis. That's your cigar. And he goes, oh, no, I smoked my cock.
Jesus. Oh, my God. You are hilarious. I love you to pieces. And now tell everybody in the social media world where they can find you and plug any shows or your special coming out.
Yeah. At Millard Comedy. M-I-L-L-A-R-D and the word comedy. That's everything. And
okay.
The new special is Nothing to Nobody. And it's in the selling stage right now, but I can't get an offer for it. So it will be. Yeah. So I'm having a meeting Thursday, and there's another party that seems interested, too. So I might get my choice. Yeah. So it'll be available for streaming somewhere, and then the audio version will also come out, and that'll be on everything as well.
Perfect. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Nothing to Nobody. And
look out for it, everybody. It's going to be great. And Damon's hilarious, and I work with him on the regular. He's great.
Yeah.
And also, don't forget to follow us here at Old School New School Comedy on the Instagrams. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share our show. We love you.
Yeah.